Welcome to Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
Good morning, everyone. Gary Allen coming to you live from the studios of KNBR 680 San Francisco. Joining me on the program this morning, we have David Hayes. He's the CEO of Skyline Construction. And also joining us this morning, we have an old friend of the program. That's Paul Whitkay, who's the CEO of Alliance of Chief Executives. Today, we're going to be touching on a number of different subjects. Number one, of course, we're going to touch on the health of the economy, what's going on out there, because we have two gentlemen here that are very interested, also, of course, for personal reasons, business reasons, of what's going on out there. They're also interacting with the economy at all different levels, so it'll be interesting to see what's happening at the local level, and then we'll turn to Paul and be able to get an idea of what's happening throughout the Bay Area and Northern California and maybe throughout the country with the various alliances that they have as well. I want to thank the guys behind the glass for working this morning. I've got my fabulous producer. First of all, though, Paul Simone has actually decided to come back to work this week, so Paul is here as well, so that's kind of good in that respect. And, you know, the whole concept here is, you know, this is fun, interactive radio. We always have a good time with it. It's a business show. But first of all, it's your show. It is my show, of course, too. But now you're right, it's not my show. But anyway, the point being is the fact that we have a good time with it, and we try to bring in great guests for you to get an insight into what's happening in the world of business. So first of all, I'd like to officially welcome now Paul Whitkay, the CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives. And Paul, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's always a pleasure to be here.
For those people that don't know you and don't know the organization that you were the CEO of, just give us the quick, you know, the background, the elevator speech, as they say in the world of business, as to what it's about and why it's such an intriguing organization and why you're the head of it, because you have the opportunity to do whatever you want.
Thank you. I founded it back in 1996, 12 years ago, because I had run a company back in the early 90s and had been an organization of CEOs that I just found incredibly valuable. But I believe very much in the value of diversity. So the Alliance has become an organization of over 250 CEOs in the Bay Area that run companies in every single industry sector and every market niche you can imagine. And all we do is create environments where these CEOs can get together and really talk totally openly and honestly and candidly about their most profound challenges that they're dealing with in total confidence. So CEOs that join the Alliance recognize that they don't have all the answers, that they can learn from other CEOs, and that they can always fine-tune every aspect of their operations, and occasionally come through that breakthrough idea that can change an industry. So thank you very much.
And also joining us this morning is David Hayes. He's the CEO of Skyline Construction, which has a very interesting history in itself, but also the fact that he is, I believe also, and I know he is, a member of the Alliance as well. So, David, welcome to the program, and welcome to live radio, by the way, for the first time. So don't worry about it. It's just fun. We're having a conversation. Now, you know, David, first of all, you know, Skyline Construction, when we talk about that, and, you know, you're a business owner, you've become pretty successful in that sense. And so the concept that we're looking at here is to get an idea, at least, first of all, what would have attracted you to an organization, you know, such as the one we're talking about here?
The Alliance offers the opportunity to sit down with your peers and discuss the subjects that you typically cannot discuss with people in the company, because although we're an ESOP and we're an open book platform and there's tremendous communication on all levels, there are still those decisions and things that happen that are just for you to own, and it offers the chance to share some of the thoughts and concerns that you have and get some guidance, opinions, and very candid feedback.
You know, it's interesting because that's one of the things I know Paul and I have discussed this on the radio before. Being a CEO or being any type of owner of a business, it is somewhat lonely and also isolationist in the sense that you don't want to be an isolationist, but there are certain things that you have to kind of keep close to the vest. And so does this really give you that avenue? Has it been successful in that sense to be able to kind of open up and kind of show your cards and say, hey, guys, I don't have all the answers. And, you know, here's what I'm thinking. But do you guys have some experiences here that you could help me with?
Absolutely. And just sometimes being able to say it out loud is such therapy in itself. And then, of course, you get their feedback on top of that, and it has. And sure enough, now and then you run into somebody who's been through exactly the same situation, and then a second person who's been through the situation, and you listen and learn from their experiences and, you know, put it all in your database in the brain and decide which direction am I going to go from here.
So it's kind of interesting because I guess, and I'll point this to both of you, but what it sounds like the Alliance of Chief Executives is, and this will be in the real, let's call it down and dirty, it's almost like a school of hard knocks without all the hard knocks, because you get to talk to everybody and figure out what's going on out there, don't you? You don't have to always experience it on your own.
I'd like to think that, but I also think that beyond just learning about how to operate your current businesses better, I get excited about finding these breakthrough ideas that particularly nowadays with how everything is being globalized and you can communicate with everybody in the world and technology costs are making everything cheaper and more productive, that so often you can just observe what somebody else is doing in some other totally different industry and say, wait a second, I could use that same type of strategy or technology or change in my business model in my industry, and it totally changes an industry and makes them different and better and more successful than other companies in their industry. And that's exciting.
We're visiting this morning with Paul Whitgay, the CEO and of the Alliance of Chief Executives at Saturday Morning. And I don't feel like I want to work right now, but I have to with the motor mouth going. And also David Hayes, the CEO of Skyline Construction. Now, Paul, I understand last week the CEO roundtable for Alliance of Chief Executives had a gathering, and I noticed the title of it here is Preparing for the Downturn, and that sounds somewhat ominous in that respect when you have that, you know, preparing for the downturn. What did the organization or the group learn from this gathering last week? And also, can you give us some anecdotal evidence of what, you know, the membership in general is thinking about the economy right now?
Well, frankly, I can give you the feedback, but I was up sailing with my son on Puget Sound, but I believe David Hayes of Skyline was there, and he can give you a little bit of feedback on what the mood of the Bay Area CEOs are.
So why don't we do that first then? Why don't we go ahead and what's your experience now? You were sitting in the room and you're there with your peers, all types of different industries across the board, so that's just a great, you know, total, you know, cross-section of businesses. Did you all just feel like you were down in the bunker getting ready for the big one to go off, or what was it like?
The room was positive. I was surprised how not down in the mouth everyone was. They were using this economy and the realities that we're all faced with now to really hunker down on their strategies and, you know, focus on blocking and tackling. And fundamental things were discussed, such as tightening costs and watching those expenses. You know, where are they going? But everybody was very excited about the fact that the talent available in the market right now is terrific, and go out and get that talent and have a compelling story to attract the talent to come work for you. And then do the things that you should do with your clients. You know, see them more. Make sure you're getting FaceTime with them. Let them, you know, you're servicing them correctly and letting them know how much you appreciate their business and if there's anything else you can do for them.
Now, David, one of the things, too, we always like to find out a little bit is about, you know, obviously the people we're talking about or talking with here on the radio. So can you give us a little background of Skyline Construction and what the business is about and the kind of the vision of what you're doing?
Well, Skyline started in 1996. It was formulated by four people getting together and formed a partnership, a Standard S Corporation set up to go into the commercial interiors office space in San Francisco. And the company grew not rapidly, but under controlled methodology for a while. And we were having fun. And by the time 2001 came around, it was about $36 million from zero and profitable and healthy. And then
that is a healthy growth phase you had there.
Well, thanks. It was a fun ride, and we certainly had a lot of fun as partners. And then in 2001, things started to, you know, take a turn, and we certainly felt the pain from that. And what we noticed was we needed to be more strategic in how we were attacking the market, as opposed to being reactive. So that's when we started looking at our structure and are we happy with what we're doing. And the partners decided ultimately we need to split up here. David, it's your turn to take the reins, and good luck with it. And that's when the ESOP structure was put in place, because I met with all of our key team members at Skyline, and we decided they didn't have the money for equity, but we wanted them to have equity. And the obviously the sellers wanted the exit associated with an ESOP. And so we came up with a great win-win situation for all parties. And since then, I'm happy to say we've more than doubled in annual revenue since we did that in January 2005. And we focus primarily on building data centers and high-end interior space. And we build a lot of green space. We built our office space actually 4 years ago green, and we've been big proponents on LEED and green building.
It's interesting because you bring up that term ESOP, and that's an employee stock ownership program. And for the people out there that don't quite understand it, we'll delve into that just after the break. We're going to do a lot of that type of situation where we're going to talk about a very unique, different type of ownership for a business that really, and I'll just call it, spreads the wealth amongst the various employees from top to bottom and gives them, quote, that feeling of ownership, if not outright ownership in that sense as well, which is great. This morning we're visiting with Paul Whitgay. He's the CEO of Alliance of Chief Executives, and also David Hayes, the CEO of Skyline Construction. And you're listening to Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the business and sports leader. Just before the break, we were talking a little bit about the ESOP and the whole concept or the idea, and a lot of people out there listening this morning may not have any idea what an ESOP is, and it is a very unique type of business ownership. And, you know, as we get into what it actually is, first of all, David, what I would like to ask you is somewhat of the motivation that you had beyond, obviously, the potential profit and all those types of things that is underlying every business decision out there. Why, when you looked at the concept of an ESOP, did you say, this is something that might be of interest to me? And then I want to follow up with Paul and get some of your experiences as well with people that are out there. But, David, you know, it's an interesting thing when we talk about, wait a minute, giving the employees ownership of the company, when most entrepreneurs, when they first start up a business, are like, I see something, I have a solution for something, and I'm going to be rewarded for that. So it is a different mentality.
It is, and I can't take all the credit for it. It was a conversation that went on with the partnership with Skyline, the previous partnership, to go this route, and with the key performers in the firm, that this was a route that worked for them. But to get back to the reasons why it made sense, a company like ours has a lot of people to make it successful, and these people don't necessarily have the financial wherewithal to go buy equity in a firm. And so how do you create equity and ownership for people who are really driving a business? And the ESOP platform was perfect because they didn't have to come out of pocket, so they earn it as they go and as the company performs. And that way they still get their equity piece and they continue to drive the firm forward as they have now and will continue to do so.
Now, Paul, you've seen many different businesses throughout your experience with the Alliance, et cetera. How often do you see ESOPs taken into consideration? And is there a general type of business that you see where it's very successful?
They're not used that often in my estimation. But the concept of employee ownership is really prevalent, particularly in the Bay Area. And in the early stage technology companies, they do it through stock options and such. So it's really more there's two aspects to it. One is the financial structure of an ESOP, and it happened to make sense for David's case in Skyline Construction. But what he's also done that has really differentiated his company and made them very competitive in their industry is created a culture using open book management, where the ESOP is in alignment with the open book management, where he's asking people to take an interest in that company and making it better and serving the customers, building great customer loyalty and being really efficient, looking at every single item that they do to make sure they're totally productive and as profitable as possible. And if they do that, they'll be rewarded as well. So I think that is as much the differentiation and the culture that David's built at Skyline Construction.
Now, David, that's interesting that he brings that up. So have you seen the effects, as an example, since you're in the construction industry and you're dealing with projects? So you've got project managers out there. You've got various foremen. You have guys just on the line doing the work as well, of course. Do you see a difference in pride of ownership and also being more interested in, let's call it, the bigger picture versus I'm just getting there at 7 a.m. and I'm out of there at 5:30?
Absolutely. In fact, it's interesting you bring that up. What makes us unique as an ESOP is we're one of the few in the country that included all the collective bargaining employees as well. And that was a discussion that happened with our legal counsel. Most people don't do this. Why are you doing this? Well, it was the right thing to do for us because we're in the customer service business. The product gets delivered, like you said, on the front line by the foreman and the people in the field. So what I've noticed, the change in them, it's been tremendous at first. You know, when I'd share all the financial reports with them and our metrics and data and key performance indicators, they were scared to ask me questions, and it was clear they didn't completely understand it all. But over the last 3 years, their education has grown, and it's exciting to watch the questions they'll ask me. And they'll be tough questions at times. They've really taken an interest in the internal performance of the company, but also externally. You know, are our customers satisfied? Well, how do we know? How do we measure that? And we share that with them, and it's really driven them to focus on the internal, not only internally Skyline, but externally, how they can help a client's business be better and be part of the solution for them. And it's attracted, on top of that, a lot of talent to our firm, particularly in the delivery end of the field, to come work for us, because that's a great motivator. I mean, it's exciting to be involved like that, and they're not used to it, and so it attracts a lot of talent.
Now, it's interesting. You're the CEO of Skyline Construction. What have you seen now? You know, do you see people even all the way down to the line kind of understanding and opening up their minds to the fact of how, number one, can we deliver a better solution to the client? And then number two, are they also now concerned even about the little things to drive the profitability of Skyline versus just taking the paycheck?
Well, can I tell you a story?
Absolutely.
When we first did this ESOP, I was really nervous that the field people, if they would accept it and embrace it. 2 weeks into the ESOP, all of the field operations people pulled me aside and said, we have a 10-point list of cost-cutting measures we think would be important for the firm to take on immediately. First of all, my jaw dropped because it wasn't what I expected, and the list was tremendous and right on the button. And I knew, you know, you have those moments in time in business or when you do anything, you know, we say, we may just be onto something here. And I knew at that moment we were onto something. And we implemented that list, and it was successful. It saved the company a lot of money. And right off the bat, the people I was most concerned about had bought in immediately and demonstrated that to me. So
now, Paul, that's an interesting question or interesting story, because is this one of those situations where, and you've talked a lot about this in the past, where empowering your employees to be able to help a company drive its vision, I mean, isn't that like the perfect example that you see of something like that?
It really is, and I know David's a big sports fan and uses sports analogies, and we're on the sports leader here at KNBR. So
you're going to get more Giants runs? Is that what you're going to say? Anything you can do to get these guys to hit the ball a little bit more?
But I do put it in analogy where you asked whether it helps the actual worker right on the line get up in the morning and get to the job on time and start working hard, everything else. Well, it's really quite the same as, say, the 49ers who just started their preseason workouts. They're going to be working during the summer, going to the weight room every day. It's not that much fun to get up early, have to go to the weight room and do several hours of lifting weights. But if you have peer and each individual, they're going to go through periods where they don't want to do it. But when there's peer pressure, when they know that everybody else is doing it, and if they don't do it, they're letting down their teammates or letting down the people in the company and their friends, and also having impact on their pocketbook because their profits won't be as good, the peer pressure really pulls it along. So it's everybody working together as a team, and they don't, you know, somebody really doesn't want to go along and doesn't want to be part of that team, well, then the team rejects that person and says they shouldn't. This is not the right place for them.
So it really creates an aura of collective responsibility, so that people do take responsibility for each of their actions, and maybe it even opens it up beyond personal responsibility, but the responsibility to the team and to the company as well. I mean, is that kind of your thinking, David, on this?
It is, and I basically look at myself as a member of the team. I just happen to have a C on my jersey, and so I have to prove myself every day to these people as well, and so do they. And I find the interesting thing is we really haven't fired people or terminate people. It's more of a discussion of performance and are you willing to do X, Y, and Z, and if you're not, then you don't fit in here, and how many times those people have made that decision themselves to move on and seek employment in another location or pull up their bootstraps and get it going. So
suck it up and get it done.
That's right.
We're visiting this morning with Paul Whitkay. He's the CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives, and also we have David Hayes, the CEO of Skyline Construction. When we come back from this break, what I do want to do is turn the conversation a little bit to the economy, to the potential recession. I mean, basically, it just depends upon what industry you're in, if it's a recession yet or not. And what I'd like to find out from both of you is some of the things that either you're doing personally or that you're seeing anecdotally or in person with what other companies are doing as well. We'll be back in just a moment with more Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the business and sports leader. Good morning again, everyone. Gary Allen coming to you live from the studios of KNBR 680 San Francisco. Joining me on the program this morning is Paul Whitkay, the CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives. And also we have David Hayes, the CEO of Skyline Construction, joining us in the studio this morning. Paul, what I wanted to do is to start to begin with a little bit of what you're seeing out there as far as the economy goes and what can companies do. In other words, you see the cliches. In other words, some people say, well, the shutdown is, the slowdown is coming. We're going to go ahead and slash and burn. That's the, you know, the old school tactics. What do good companies do, at least in your estimation, to prepare for these inevitable periods of time where we go up and we go down? This isn't a surprise. It's here, and we just have to figure out what to do with it each time.
I do have several thoughts on the economy. I certainly don't have a crystal ball as to whether how long it's going to be, but we're certainly in a downturn overall. But a few things. One, not every industry is affected the same. If you're in real estate, you're hurting. If you've got oil wells and you're in oil production, you're doing really well these days with $120 per barrel oil. So you got to look at industry by industry. And frankly, good companies run their companies preparing for that inevitable downturn when things are going well. They don't overexpand and get fat and lazy. They take those opportunities to run a good, tight ship at all times so that when the downturn comes, they're ready. And frankly, good companies look forward to downturns. It may not be fun, but that's when market share changes, they build customer loyalty, and the weaker companies start losing and during the downturns, and they hurt. And people like David Hayes, running a great company at Skyline Construction, I was talking to him earlier, he picks up some phenomenal people in a downturn from competitors. They keep their good customers and get rid of the customers that aren't quite so so fun to have or so profitable. So it's actually clean up your balance sheet, clean up your business, and take advantage of some of the things that you can do in a downturn that you can't do during the boom time.
And this is the classic philosophy of chaos creates opportunity in that sense, because what you have is it will weed out the weaker players when in an upmarket everybody gets a share of the business. But this period of time, isn't it really this time that separates those good competitors from bad competitors, people that are properly financed from, you know, doing it on a bootstrap and not being prepared? Because this is where things shake out, don't they, each time around?
Yes, I remember about 10 years ago, I was sitting down with the CEO of a global semiconductor equipment company. And I don't know of an industry that goes through as big a cycles up and down as semiconductor equipment companies. And it was in a very down time. The industry was really in the tank. And he was smiling. He was happy. And I'm saying, what's going on? How can you be so happy? And he said, you got to understand, we make our biggest difference and our biggest gains in the downturn. This is when market share shifts. The weak competitors actually cut their sales budgets, their marketing budgets, some of their engineers, and we're out there talking to the customers. They're not buying right now, but they have time to actually evaluate new technology, evaluate their plans for the growth periods when they're going to do capital investments. And so right now the market share is shifting, but it won't be demonstrated by actual sales until the market starts going up again. But this is when we're actually making a big difference.
Well, it's interesting to bring that up, because at this point, maybe the mentality then has to be slightly different for the, let's call it the C-class of executives right now. What should the upper echelons of companies right now be focusing on in respect to preparing for the downturn versus the boom times where you're just trying to keep up with growth?
Well, if they're already in a downturn, it's maybe too late if they're... because they should be preparing ahead of time and making certain that their balance sheet is in order and they're not too fat. However, I really think it comes down to two things, focus and flexibility.
That's an interesting dichotomy you just said there.
When there's a downturn, you really do have to focus on your core. What do you really do best? What do you do better than any other competitor in the industry? What customers are the best? What employees are the best? Make certain you keep your best customers, your best employees. Focus on the best business and invest in them. And then all those other things that were trials and they're not doing as well or unprofitable or things that just got sloppy on, those are the things you cut. Cut back on the excess and invest in the core. The flexibility, it's the world has really changed. The ability to communicate at virtually no cost with anybody in the world, to do business with India and China, outsourcing, offshoring, being able to share technology and information across borders. Now you can outsource everything that's not core, so you don't have to invest in huge real estate buildings for lots of people that aren't necessary in a downturn. You don't have to invest in capital equipment. They maintain their flexibility to shrink in a downturn and expand quickly. And that's the best companies have found ways to do that.
And what are some of the common mistakes that you've seen out there, though, in the past where people have just kind of run it into the ground and things that you see perpetuating themselves over and over again, even though it maybe should be common sense, but you just see it happen over and over again?
The common mistakes I see are denying that things are going bad and hoping that things are going to just continue to do better and avoiding taking action. They should be taking action immediately when they see something's wrong. The best CEOs out there, as soon as they sense something's happening in the economy, they go out and talk to their customers, they talk to their employees, they get out of their offices instead of hiding inside their offices and hoping things get better. They get out more, and they find out exactly what's going on, and they move faster to make changes.
Now, David Hayes, the CEO of Skyline Construction, after all of that interesting information there, I'm going to put you on the spot. Is that what you're doing these days, or are you doing something that's slightly different, or what's unique about your kind of idea of how to get through this downturn, this inevitable downturn that's here?
Well, I'm shaking my head, nodding while Paul's talking, because that's exactly what we did. We did a survey of all of our employees back in December, and then took the results of that survey. It was an external, internal survey of what we're doing as a firm, and we got 8 key people from the various work sectors of the company together in a 2-day retreat, and we did our strategic plan moving forward for the next 3 years, and the feedback from them and their ideas and thoughts of where we should be focusing our attention are exactly where Paul's talking about. A lot of what you like to call blocking and tackling stuff, you know, where are we going to control costs, where our process and procedures need to improve, where our sales strategy needs to be more diversified and focused on our clients and client relationships and touching them more often. We're blessed with a dynamic and fantastic sales group, and they're real forward thinkers, and so right off the bat, you know, reading the tea leaves, they said, we need to touch our customers more, and we need to make sure we're taking care of them. And that's really what we've done to focus on this recession. And seriously, we were doing this stuff 4 years ago. So I believe that the fundamentals that make a company successful in a recession are the same things that make it successful in an upturn. I mean, you need to have these practices going at all times.
We're visiting this morning with Paul Wittke. He's the CEO of Alliance of Chief Executives, and also David Hayes, the CEO of Skyline Construction. We'll be back in just a moment with more Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the business and sports leader.
You're listening to Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
Good morning again, everyone. Gary Allen coming to you live from the studios of KNBR 680 San Francisco. Joining me on the program this morning is Paul Wittke, the CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives, and David Hayes, the CEO of Skyline Construction. We've been talking about the economy, what's going on at this point, what businesses should be thinking about. We've also touched on the ESOP, the Employee Stock Ownership Program, as far as how the plan actually is able to give ownership to the rank and file, whoever happens to be participants of the ESOP. And Paul, I've got to ask you now, you've got the bigger 10,000-foot view of, you know, more than just one ESOP here. What's the danger here? You know, I'm playing devil's advocate just for a moment, tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but the concept of, okay, now I'm an owner and I'm also one of the employees, well, you know, I'm going to give myself a raise. I think I deserve a lot more. I know I work hard and I'm probably the best darn employee in this company. What's the danger there?
Well, every company's different and every situation's different, but what David has done is quite extraordinary, and I would like to hear from David on his experiences, because in my observations, even though it sounds great and all the employees are empowered and thinking like owners and taking proactive actions to serve their customers better and save costs, it's very difficult to all of a sudden, after many years, open up the books and show everybody, because most owners are a little embarrassed about something. Either they're making too little money and they're scared that the employees will bolt for another company because they think they might be in trouble, or they're making so much money that they're scared the employees will want to get more now that they're owners. So it's very difficult. There's almost every company has some areas that they're not all that comfortable with, that need fixing. It's like showing opening up your home and showing every closet.
We don't want to go there.
Exactly. So I'd be very interested to hear how David did it, what his experience was once he started opening up the information to all the employees.
David, that is interesting because, you know, just as the layman on the outside, a lot of the listeners out there, whether they're business owners or even employees, et cetera, thinking, that's never going to work. Everybody knows what's going on. And, you know, the concern is too much information and, you know, motivation will go one way or the other based upon the results. So in your unique situation, why has it worked out so well?
Well, I think first off, making your statement, I think more information is a good thing. As human beings, when we're communicating, we tend to be more powerful. We have better relationships in our life, and everybody's moving in the same direction with great communication. And
have you been on Oprah before or something? I mean, this is perfect. You've got great answers this morning. I'm thoroughly enjoying the conversation with both of you this morning, by the way. But sorry to interrupt, but it's just perfect answer.
Well, and it's what works, and we've seen it. And so what we did, we went back to them and realized, well, we need to keep our cost structure down. That's very important to be a successful organization. And in order to do so, you know, how do we make that happen? And we went back and thought, why don't we let the employees select their salary, give them a range in each job, and give us feedback of what the range would be that would be fair, and let them select it. And then, accordingly, their profit-sharing piece of once we get past the cost to run the organization would be higher if they picked a lower salary and lower if they picked a higher salary. And that flexibility offers really two things. You have people who are, they're having babies in their life and they're buying houses and they need a little bit of a higher salary. And you have people who are stable and want to go with the lower salary so they can get greater reward. And so we went back to them, the feedback, they gave us the numbers. And
that's very interesting. So what you're saying is you basically created the playing field or the range and said, here's what we're thinking, here's some flexibility in how you want to be compensated for what your labor is going to be. That is incredibly powerful, because someone, as you said, who's 25 and just wants the big money, and someone that's 45 and wants something different, they can all flourish under what you're talking about. Is that correct?
It is, and that was the mindset behind it. I mean, all of us were at different stages in our life and have different financial responsibilities. And really, it was to get their feedback on, where are we in the range? And so all the field people went out and did a survey of all our competitors around town, came back to me with a matrix of the hourly wages they're getting paid, and we use that as a database resource. All of the in-office profit-making people.
You had your own people doing research. This is awesome. I mean, think about empowering. I mean, Paul, I mean, the whole concept here, you've got people on the line going out and getting information about your competitors and what people are paying. This is an empowered organization, isn't it?
Well, in almost every company, the people who know what is really going on with their customers and their industry are the people on the front lines. They may not see the 10,000-foot view of where they might go with this, but they're the ones that have the most information of what's really going on a day-to-day basis. And so how you share that information between the C-level executives that have to make strategic decisions to invest or expand or to contract or go into diversify or focus, but really with the in-the-field, in-the-moment, 24/7 information, it's very powerful if you can have free flow of information.
Now, David, I have to ask you, when we talked about the fact that these people are kind of picking within this range of flexibility how to be compensated, is it completely open? Does everybody kind of know what everybody else is making? I'm thinking a little bedlam here, but how do you make that work?
Well, we certainly try to protect people's privacy, and so we show numbers in groups. So there's a project management group, the field group, executive management group, and so there's not, they know what they're performing as a group. Now, the interesting thing about letting people pick their salary, there's a risk associated with that, but everything in life, if you take a risk, you can get tremendous reward. And I'm happy to say the people, 75% of them selected the lowest salary level with the highest profit incentive side, particularly in the project management side.
So you're saying there's a little bit of capitalistic heart in all of them out there.
And that's what we're trying to get out of them. And it's worked great. And I'm very proud of the fact that they have, not only made us a stable company by making that selection, but have performed and certainly done well, and the organization has grown.
Now, I got to ask you the personal question here, because, of course, this was a huge leap of faith when you first even thought about this, kicked it around. You probably sat around somewhere multiple times kind of kicking this thing around and saying, it will work, it won't work, devil's advocate, all that kind of stuff. Now that you've gone through it, number one, do you think that your organization at the management level is now performing better than it was previously? And number two, are you pleasantly surprised, ecstatic, disappointed, etc., in the other part of the people that you've brought into your management team, whether you know it or not, the ESOP folks out there? So in other words, how are you folks doing on the management side, and how have the folks responded, the actual people out there in the field doing the job for you?
Well, take the second one first, the response from the employees who have been there from the beginning in particular and who have been there for enough time to absorb it has been tremendous. They shock me every day. I tell people all the time, I've been mentored from my employees, not from people that I worked for. They have taught me so much about how to run a business, and they have the answers. They're there. You just got to push them to make the decisions, and when they start making decisions, look out, because they're going to make a lot of them, and a lot of good ones. And as far as the company where we are now, am I ecstatic? Well, I guess I would say the following. We're trying to win the Super Bowl here, and I'd say we probably just got by the first round of the playoffs. Maybe we've just won the second round. We still have a long way to go, and we just want to keep getting better. But we've definitely come together as a team, and we're about to find out how good a team we are. And we're about to see the results of a hard 3 years of very hard work of learning how to work with each other and learning how to make decisions as owners on all levels.
Now, Paul, we're coming up towards the end of the hour here, so I want to give you an opportunity, at least at the commercial break, we'll call this, as the CEO now of the Alliance of Chief Executives. If people want more information about the organization, and if someone is interested in joining, what is the benefit in, you know, the 30-second spot here of what would make sense for someone thinking about joining an organization like this?
Well, if you are a CEO or owner of an organization somewhere in the Northern California, we'd be happy to talk with you. We learn from every CEO out there. And if there is a fit within our organization, everybody is expected to bring some knowledge and be willing to share that knowledge and information and engage in really critical strategic discussions with other CEOs. And that's how we learn, and that's how we generate ideas.
So if someone wants more information, where's the best place to go?
Just go to the website at allianceofceos.com. And you can check us out there, give us a call, and we'd be happy to talk with you.
And David, now here's your 30-second spot real quick, a little bit about Skyline Construction. If people want more information, where should they go? And, you know, what's on your mind at the end?
Well, one, I want to say I joined the Alliance because I had those stare-in-the-moment mirrors, and Paul's group came along, and it was perfect timing for me to be able to bounce things off because I wasn't sure about everything. But secondly, about Skyline, go to www.skylineconst.com. That's www.skylineconst.com. We have offices here in San Francisco and Santa Clara. We have tremendous clients. We couldn't be happier with the people who have selected us to work with them, and both offices are thriving.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you guys for coming on this morning, and you know, I'm getting the big rap from the guy, so thank you very much for coming in this morning, and I want to thank each of you for spending part of your Saturday morning. Love to have you back on at some point in the future, hopefully when we're in an upturn of the economy. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Yeah, thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend. You've been listening to Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680, the business and sports leader.
Gary Allen on Business on KNBR 680.